I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollock, and joining me, sitting down, actually no, he is standing with me by the fire. We are rubbing our hands and getting cozy by the fire. It's Paul Sporer of Rotographs. Paul, it's great to see you.
It's great to see you as well, Nick. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course, of course. And today is an exciting one. We're going back to a bit of the roots here with the Fireside Chat. Over the years, of course, we started with the single pitcher. Mm-hmm. However, as we would extend the Fireside Chat throughout these seasons and the off seasons, as two guys who would rank pitchers constantly, you know, some of the most, the biggest debates we would have, the loudest ones, were when it would be about ranking of pitchers and what Spore has done. You put out your rankings, I believe, earlier this week. Is that right? Or Friday last week?
On Sunday.
Lovely.
Well, weekend and drop there.
I love that. Sunday is what everyone wishes I would do. And I do not have time on the weekend because they want to fulfill it. And I can't do that. So
no, I get it. But yeah. Well, it was because it was late during the week. So I had to make up. I said it was going to be out. And then on Friday, I'm like, oh God, it was like 8:30 at night. I didn't want to post it at night. I'm going to do it on the weekend and I'll do it on Sunday.
It is the worst feeling when that happens. And I'm so proud of you for getting it done.
Thank you.
And that means we have some pretty recent rankings. I mean, this is Tuesday morning around 12:30 PM Eastern time. And, you know, I put mine out on Monday. We have a little bit different thought process. And I do want to articulate that before we really get going, but Spore here put out a sheet for us to really see the PVN. So it's player versus neutral. And
no, it's not.
No.
Peter versus Nestor.
Yeah, there it is. People versus Nurk, because they're all so angry.
Yeah, it's all of us versus. I represent the people. Nick is the big bad corporation.
Yeah, there it is. I understand this. All I try to do is demoralize your feelings about your players. So
yeah, you're so negative.
Yeah, the worst. So, so that's what we're going to do for a lot of this episode. I think there are some very interesting players, also just overall that we have to talk about as well. And it's interesting, actually. You have this done as the positive on one side, the negative on the other. I'm actually going to do us a solid and flip it on the other side as I do this. But it's a fun way for us to just see, oh, wait, we do have some differences on certain guys. And before we really address those, I can see some major differences. And I think that's just about philosophy of how we make our lists. And I really want first for you to articulate your thought process. Is this for 12 teamers, 15 teamers? How are you going about making your starting pitching rankings?
So I do have a little bit of a deeper league focus. Roto is where I start. That's probably our bigger difference is Roto versus head-to-head. Because the 12 and 15 does play a role for sure. But it shouldn't drastically change things as far as like where somebody's going to rank necessarily, right? There can be some differences, but it shouldn't be terribly insane when you're talking about 12 versus 15, although there are differences. I think the head-to-head versus Roto can make some differences where, if anything, though, I think in head-to-head, maybe you're a little bit more open, especially head-to-head points on starting guys. Your thresholds are a bit more open because it's pretty hard to get negative points. So you'll take the points that you can get. Whereas in Roto, you're kind of massaging the categories and all sorts of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I do have a deeper look, you know, guys that you are traditionally going to consider Tobies. I'm going to try to find a bit more value within the Toby spheres. Yes. I understand the general principle there. You know, I'm somebody, and even my friends within the 15 team sphere kind of give me some heck about, you know, being like on Wade Miley and those types of guys. You know, I know Miley's out for the year, but that sort of pitcher, I'm looking to find more value in, but they are risky. They're risky whether you're streaming them in 12s or you're team streaming them, as I like to call it, in 15s, which means they're bouncing up and down your reserve roster to starting roster. So yeah, I tighten up because of the categories. So categories matter. And then I'm trying to find more value in the Toby spheres, whereas you're kind of grouping them together. I'm trying to parse out who the best Tobies might be, who the Hollies will be.
Right, sure. Yeah, I love that you're using those terms. Holly, of course, being a Toby, that has a little bit more of a strikeout emphasis, but doesn't really have the ability with their arsenal to be this ace plateau. It's more of a solid plateau with some lovely strikeout games here and there.
Probably some cherry bomb aspects to Holly's, they'll spike a big one for you, but it's not quite that on-offness of
like
it.
It's not Taj Bradley.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't think we're that far away from Taj Bradley. Maybe I'm missing that one. Oh, we are a little bit. And we'll talk about that. This is also something I do want to emphasize is how I go about my rankings is very strange. And it's actually something that I've embraced lately because I have Josh Mockincern helping me out with my sheet every week, which is really nice. He makes a full sheet of the list saying, okay, here are the guys who are not on the list now. Here are the ones that should be removed. Here are updates on honorable mentions. And by the way, honorable mentions are essentially every other pitcher that has a rotation spot. I just say something. So I'm like, hey, cool. I thought about this guy. And this is what I think right now.
Even crazy if they're not that you put comments about
it's
all the...
Like, just, you know, sometimes I don't update all of them on the honorable mentions.
It's still so impressive, though.
But it's a lot of early work that then gets easier as the season goes. But I appreciate that. The interesting thing, though, is this year I've made a shift at the end of my ranks. And I think this is the way to go, which is I just have one final tier that is saying, look, this is just this week, the streamers, and I have the matchups each week. So I say, okay, are these pitchers, there's a whole subset in 12 teamers to me of pitchers who are not worthwhile to hold on through a bad matchup. Yes. That is the 10-day stash, right?
Yep.
And you really NBA just have action a roster spot for 10. Right?
Your basketball roots coming in with a 10-day contract.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
That's something that they have to like, I don't even know if they still have it, but it used to be like, he was signed to a 10-day and then they have like a little trial period. And I know your basketball coach there.
There you go.
So, you know, you give a little window there for some guys, but you're not bending over backwards to keep them.
And you're better off just dropping them and getting at least one streamer in that time. And those guys at the end of the list are just like, look, you have a good matchup this week. That's fine. Let's get out. While there is a distinct Toby tier of saying you are going to hold on even if they do have one bad matchup, because you feel like this is still generally a better play than losing them to the wire for a streamer. Mm-hmm. So that does mean that a lot of, I think, the names that we have the biggest differences on, I'm looking to say like Zach Littell, you have it at just under 70. I have him at 93, for example. There's Kyle Harrison in there, Reed Detmers, Savali at this point. Some of those are more so in that aspect of, yeah, I don't really think you should be holding on to them for through a bad start, because there's just so much streaming you can do inside of 12 teamers at the moment. And I also would understand in your 15 teamers, yeah, you can't let that go. That's a more important thing. So I understand the increased value there.
And
if you want to add there, yeah.
When you're up in, like once you start to get down past, I don't know where the number is, but it's probably somewhere in the 50s or 60s, the talent clusters get much larger. So even taking Zach Littell, for example, 69 versus 93, at his core, we probably don't agree or disagree too much about Zach Littell and who he is. But like you said, that is where our fundamental differences come in of valuing 15 team versus 12 team. Right. You can't put Zach Littell on a 15 team waiver. There's just not enough to get. You got to hold him. But in a 12, you can burn and churn. And I've talked about it a ton on this pod, but especially on Sleeper in the Bus with Justin, about how that's actually a real difficult factor for me in the shallower formats is knowing when to cut. I'm too patient. And I don't say that like that's not a positive. You got to stick and move more. But I'm in my 15 team brain. I'm like, I would never put Reed Detmers or Kyle Harrison on a waiver wire in a 15. But in a 12. You got to stick and move. 12,
it's, you know, it's ratio hits are more dramatic and you have to be chasing. I say this often, 12 teamers, you shouldn't be, the goal is to stop streaming.
And ideally, if you're
settling for a average final staffer on your rotation, you have an average rotation and you should be constantly trying to improve that back end one. And the fact of the matter is in 12 teamers, you will find stable arms that are more so than your eighth starting pitcher off the wire. If you're able to constantly burn and churn, a lot harder to do that in 15 teamers. Thus, the strategy does change. So I don't really want to focus too much on those kind of guys. We could have a quick thing about Clark Schmidt. I am a little curious to say 41. I do imagine being on the Yankees does affect the win chance a bit. I imagine it's more on that end. I'm a little more encouraged because his cutter looked finally so good in that last start against the Twins, and you should definitely watch the video I did of him last week. I've got Josh Sperry doing my video editing, and it's so fun. Josh. Oh my God, he's so good.
So quickly on Schmidt,
please.
He's in a group that's just called most formats, and I got pretty big groups too. I also want to point that out. You know, the second tier of all format pitchers goes from 13 to 38. Most formats is 39 to 70. I'm talking about. What's that? Yeah, two large globs there. So Schmidt is within the group that also contains your ranking for him at 65.
Sure.
So I just have him at the higher end, and you did kind of hit on maybe a reason why. Yankees, I'm going to be those little small factors like team context, maybe not really a small factor. What would we call them? Like ones that are outside their control are going to play a bigger role, right? Like take a Clark Schmidt equal, but on a crummy team. And I'm going to like, I don't know, is Jordan Hicks maybe kind of in his realm?
Jordan Hicks is in, it's a little different, but it's the same kind of idea.
But I'm going to really give a boost to the player with the better team context. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Because I'm trying to chase that win probability and everything. So he is within the tier that you rank him, 65. My 65 is there. It's actually a guy who's too high. I would move down if I redid the rankings already because Matt Manning is too high. But I'm not that far off on Schmidt. I just like his setup. I like how he's been pitching. I've been a fan of his for a while too. So there might be some kind of built-in bias of like, hey, a guy making good, somebody I liked in the past, I'm really eager about.
Yeah, the thing with Schmidt to me is it's really always been just how you're handling lefties. Like he has a sinker that should destroy them. Right-handers inside. He has good breaking balls that should just, he's got all the things for right-handers. It's just lefties has been this weird, just how do I do this? And the cutter has been the thing. It's just, you have to get this done. There's also the knuckle curve that really woke up in that twin start too. I am not quite ready to say that this is him now. This is what we're going to always see from Schmidt, which then would be a lot of the five and change starts of like 200-300 runs and hopefully a strikeout and any of that kind of thing from Clark Schmidt, which we've seen a bit this year. However, I am encouraged at this point. And if he shows up again with that cutter and curve, he will start moving up the ranks for me. The bigger question I have, I think, so what I've done is I've taken this sheet, by the way, I'm seeing like the biggest gaps. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is it's part of the same glob, and I do really want to emphasize that for everybody listening. Like, I yell every time, guys, stop getting upset at like 10 spots with somebody because they're in the same tier, and it's all relative to everybody else. And really, I gotta emphasize again, this year at 65 or so or lower, I don't know where does your end, by the way, the second or the third glob there?
That third glob is at 70. It's 39 to 70.
It really is. There are so many quality guys up to 70.
Yeah, and I can't make too many great distinctions between Yusei Kikuchi and Christopher Sanchez.
Oh,
you know, to give two examples. Like, I'm just not that far on them.
I'm actually really, really in on Kikuchi.
And I did make a big move on him. He moved up 32 spots for me.
So from 39.
The preseason. Yeah. Because I was a lot more cautious on him. You've been big on him.
Well, it's so funny. I don't want to take credit really, because it's like preseason I had him at like 45, and then I was like, no.
And
I saw one spring start of him's command being bad. I was like, oh yeah, right. He usually is bad command. And he had like a run last year. I'm being too aggressive thinking that it's going to be there. So I dropped him down to like 60. And then my last update was like, no, he's good again. And I put him at the 45. I was like, you know, I was completely wishy-washy with it. Of course, the changeup was weird. And then, yeah, the homers. But yeah, as we talked about this podcast, right? It's those have gone away as he's changed his approach, which, and by the way, the four-seamer is an elite four-seamer. And imagine if he could actually like absurdly command it. Oh my gosh.
Oh man.
It would destroy everyone. No, I think the ones that are really interesting to me is like, again, it's a part of your tier. However, I actually would have Pivetta in your higher tier. Mm-hmm. Same with Jesus Luzardo, Mackenzie Gore knocking on the door of it. And these are guys, Pivetta for you at 61, Mackenzie Gore 62, Jesus Luzardo 53. I kind of imagine that you're grouping those guys more so together, even though so than just in the same tier. I kind of wanted to get your opportunity to talk about those three, Pivetta, Gore, and Luzardo.
Yeah, you know, I maybe I'm still just being a little bit cautious on Pivetta and kicking that football. As we use the Lucy Charlie Brown analogy often with these sorts of guys. Again, the home runs, I don't want to harp on one thing all the time and make that, you know, all I ever talk about, but that's been a consistent issue for him throughout Pivetta's career. And they've been present even in this, short run this year that he only has five starts because he did get hurt, but he came back off the IL and both of his first two starts have been good. I do feel like he's probably somebody, Nick Pivetta, who would move up a good bit. I docked him about 14 spots. He was just coming off the IL when I was first doing these. Right. I probably at least remove that 14 spot drop and probably more. So I'm actually going to balk on that one and say that I would like Pivetta higher. But with Luzardo and Gore,
yeah,
I just still have some concerns with them. Lizardo's a guy that my comfort level generally leans low. I liked him as a prospect, two good years in a row last year and 22, but still a guy that I never been able to fully trust. Throw in a bad team context, and I have real nerves about him. So I have Luzardo, you know, sitting at 53, which, hey, most formats. He's consistently in the lineups. I'm starting him very often, but I'm ready to kind of rip the cord, whereas it seems like you're going to give Luzardo a bit more leeway when things aren't going at his best. And he has a 5.02 ERA right now. But I actually don't really believe in that. I like the ERA indicators.
I don't think that you did either, right?
Yeah, being mid threes with a solid enough whip. As long as his whip is under 130, I'm going to be happy with Luzardo.
Sure.
So he's doing fine. I don't have that next level trust for him the way you do. And then Gore, you have been selling me on him because we've talked about him in passing and in detail here on the pod because he was part of our game of the week last week. And he got a doubling of his ranking, more so, 64-point jump up to 62. So sometimes I'm cautious when I make that first big move up. Like, do I go all the way up and like make him
48?
Or do I make it a little bit more cautious? So I put him up to 62 as like, this is an indicator that I am in on Gore, but I couldn't quite get there. So of the three, I regret Pivetta, but I stand by Luzardo and Gore still just being a little bit too nerve-wracking for me to say, set it, forget it, never look at them.
Yeah, sure. No, I totally understand that. And with gore, it's the convenience I have of doing this every week is that I try as much as I can not to do those big swings.
Yeah.
So that allows me to have like the steady.
Yeah, the incremental.
But then if you look rising at it, the same, same time difference that you had with yours, then it would be the same. That would be a big one, right? So I'm able to, at least with my anxiety, get over that. The hit per nine for Gore right now is 9.3. And really, he's just getting unfortunate in the field. Left on base rate's also pretty bad, too. It's 27% strikeout rate right now. His four-seamer is better than ever. The fastball velocity's up. I think this is a case of development where there are times as analysts, we have to assume development. And it's annoying. We hate that. I hate it completely. I always just want to say, cool, that's what it is. That's great. Move on. And obviously, that's not what we can do because we're not playing the game of the past. We're playing the game of the future. So I think that Sean Doolittle actually has gone to Gore a little bit and actually tried to utilize more of those high four-seamers instead of just going one game of ultra high and then low. The biggest question really is the secondaries for Mackenzie Gore. I hope those do get better and more consistent. I think I've been seeing those. And I'm more in the inclination that he's gone through this gauntlet of a terrible schedule. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it's just been this entire schedule, the entire year has been Pittsburgh fine, Phillies, Oakland fine, Astros, Dodgers, Rangers, Jays in Fenway and Philly. And guess how many games that he's allowed more than three runs?
Like, I'd say one or two. Zero. Because Gore, really?
Zero. Two three-run games in that
Gore
time.
Has a great ERA. You mentioned, and I do agree with you on the whip being a little bit fluky to the negative 138 there. I think if you watch any of the Gore starts, or at least a lot of the good ones, which there are plenty to choose from out of these nine, you're going to find a lot of good pitching where you're like, wait a minute, why is this guy giving up a hit per inning? So I think that's a great call out there to bet on some whip relief coming from Gore while the ERA can sustain. We know the strikeout stuff is there. That's always been the foundation that he's building on. So yeah, I see a lot of excitement with Gore. And despite our big difference in the ranking, my plus 62 is kind of my way of saying,
right,
I am in here.
I think the Luzardo, I don't necessarily disagree with, because, and first and foremost, I mean, I'm not taking into account wins as much as you are, which I do think is the correct thing in a 15 teamer. You have to focus on wins more because
you can't catch up.
Find them.
Yeah, exactly. You can't catch up if you're chasing them. Thing,
and one of the bigger criticisms I get at times is, oh, Nick doesn't care about wins. I do. I also think that there are ways to finagle wins if you need to jump into them. Not to mention the play rater overvalues them at the end of the year.
Big time.
And it's so frustrating. We go, well, this guy is a blank X. I'm like, great, cool. Did you realize that Reese Olson had an 0-4 record when he had a 2.5 ERA? It's like, how am I supposed to figure this out? You know?
And this guy went 17-6 with a 4.20 ERA because he was on a great team type vibe.
And sometimes that's just how it is because of the team itself. The offense isn't great for the Tigers. Fine.
Yep.
At the same time, there's only so much you can kind of do. So I just generally root more in the skills, but now make small adjustments. For example, I was higher on Schmidt a little bit earlier in the season, even though he hadn't put the skills together because this is the Yankees and they do win more of those games, et cetera. So I understand the downturn on Gore and Luzardo there for that reason. Luzardo, I am curious that you have him at 53 and Hunter Green at 46.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both strikeout guys. Luzardo has been a 20% plus strikeout arm. He essentially had two really bad starts, Luzardo, before he got hurt, and has showcased pretty much being similar to that mid-threes ERA with like a 1.15 whip and 28% K rate guy, but lower win chance. And I don't know if, you know, Hunter Green's weird because
yes,
he throws 99, then he throws 95 and 96 with lower vertical break on his four-seamer, then it's better and then it's not. And between the two, I personally would say that Hunter Green is more volatile than Luzardo is, but I don't know. I mean, I'm curious why you have Luzardo underneath Hunter Green.
You know, I think that's a fair thing to question for sure, because I'm not sure that they should be apart at all, right? Like, again, we can talk about how tier differences really start to tighten at this range. And so 46 to 53 isn't a huge difference, but maybe they should just be back to back as a righty lefty version of each other, Green and Luzardo. Well, so
yeah, you know, I'm emphasizing this because I have this 32 for me with Luzardo and then 55 for Green. So I do think there is a gap.
You do think there's a difference, but you're going the other way
on it. I'm kind of curious to see. I want to know what the other side of it is.
I mean, I don't know if I have a super compelling reason here because with Lizardo, I think I'm, you know what I really think it is? It's like I'm pretty anti-Miami right now. So I'm just
that's a very understandable point.
Yeah, I'm fading like everything on them. All their guys taking a little bit of a hit for me. There's not that much reason to be that in on Cincy, though, either. So again, I'm more inclined to make the case that they should be equal. Pardon me for doing this, but I'm going to spin it back on you and say, why is Green to the negative of Lizardo?
Sure. I think there's a few aspects of one. Cincinnati, I think, hurts more than Lizardo being in Miami because it is in Cincinnati in the first place.
For sure.
Two, I would say that the arsenal of Lizardo should prevent the blowups a little bit more. And the skill that I've seen from Lizardo this year that I've liked is I would say that the weakness over the years has been actually a slider being too hittable over the plate. Okay. I've watched a lot of games with Lizardo where he just throws these sliders middle and it's like, oh, you throw this beautiful one down in inside to a righty and it's gorgeous. And all of a sudden here's the next one. It's just a meatball and you let another two strike victim hit a double off of you. And he's been a lot better, especially coming back from the IL doing that. I think I just generally have more faith that the overall ratios will be helpful for Lizardo. Wins, I could see Hunter Green, and also I can also see Hunter Green taking that step with the four-seamer. But it does feel just so reliant on that. And Lizardo's command of his four-seamer, even though having far worse shape than Hunter Green's, has generally been a well-spotted pitch. But yeah, it's hard. It's difficult. Like I've constantly felt like, am I too high to him? Am I too low on Lizardo? And I could absolutely be convinced at some point that he's in the 40s or so. While I think Green needs to continue to fight to showcase that he is not just a premier, like just a cherry bomb of like a 420 ERA and a 120. And
I think that's totally fair. Another issue I have with Green, and this is my own personal thing, is I don't really like him. I'm being honest. From a fantasy perspective, I root for him. I want him to do well because he's an exciting pitcher. Guys that throw 100, that's cool. But I don't really trust him. And so I think sometimes I might overrate him to like protect against my bias of thinking like, because I know I'm not a fan. Yeah. And I'll be like, well, I know most people got him up here. I would have him down here. I'll kind of meet in the middle, edging toward the consensus. And I don't like when I do that, but I do that on certain guys that I'm just uncertain on. And I don't necessarily, I should maybe trust my conviction of like being anti-Green a bit more. Now, the issue is I'd still be different than what we're talking about here because you're saying that they are split.
Yeah.
So I need to reinvestigate Lizardo a bit more because you're still having Green below him, whereas I'm saying maybe they should be more together. But yeah, Lizardo's a guy, I feel like maybe I am. I gave him, what, a 20 point dip? Yeah, 20 point dip from 33 to 53.
Oh, so you had him probably, 33 before. Okay.
Yeah. All so right. I've been okay. there, and I think it's my Miami feeling that kind of pushed him down maybe too much. Maybe I overreacted to the 502 ERA because I don't believe in that. Mm-hmm. I believe the ERA indicators.
Yep.
So yeah, I can get behind moving him up and then maybe going to my own convictions on Green, and then all of a sudden we're pretty close. So I think you've sold me on that being a viable change there between Green and Lizardo.
I mean, I think as the season goes on, you're probably going to see me go lower on Lizardo as well. So so it's not too far apart at all. We have other guys we do want to talk about. I mean, this is really, there's a massive one, of course.
I love the, just real quick, the six guys that we had perfectly equal. Tyler Glass now at one, Yamamoto at eight, Flaherty at 34, Suarez at 35. That's funny, two guys in a row at the same thing. Bassett at 64 and Lively at 94.
Wow, that is incredible.
Yeah, ranging basically the entire list there, 1 to 94. It's just funny that we landed on the same number for really,
the
1
through 4
guys.
Is the same for the most part. You have Scooble at 2. I was tempted to put Scooble at 1 yesterday. So
I almost did.
Understand that. I know, you almost did, right?
I would have had to dodge the accusations of homerism.
I still can't get over it that Scooble just doesn't throw his four seamer for whiffs anymore.
I know.
It drives me up the wall. I don't it makes no
frustrating.
Sense. And so, but it's all working. So who cares? But it's still kind of just like, is it though? But anyway, we got to talk about other guys. We got to take an ad break beforehand. But after that, of course, we're going to jump into these rankings a bit more and stay tuned for that.
I've got prostate cancer.
but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
So this is a big one. I want to do this. I think it's more so about our league formats, again, because I'm willing to take the risk on this. Sure. And so, you know what, at this point, you just kind of see how it works because maybe it can be bigger. Well, right now, I mean, I understand your trepidation on him. I have him at 73. You have him at 113. This is Alek Manoah. Mm-hmm. And where are you on Manoah? I mean, clearly you're out still.
So, yeah, I'm rooting for him. I really, really am. But I don't always just rank somebody high because I'm rooting for him. So I still have him in the standard streamers tier, which means I'm open to cutting. Now, in a 15, after that last outing, I'm probably holding. So he might be more of a team streamer because, you know, the seven innings of one run ball is very nice. I don't think I want to throw that back out onto the waiver wire. Now, he did that on Sunday. I didn't want to go in and change one guy and rerun all the charts. So my apologies on that. I probably would have had him closer to like 95, which would still be a decent split between us. Yeah, but he would have made the team.
70 for him was like, whatever.
So yeah, I mean, he would have joined that next group of team streamers. So that's where I'm at on Alek Manoah. I do think you want to hold him. Probably even in the shallower leagues, the 12s and the 10s, I probably want to see this next start from Manoah and then kind of go from there. So yeah, he will be elevated. 73, I get it though. You have to act so quickly in today's fantasy game. You don't get to wait to stick around and see, well, how's this going? He gets Detroit next. And then the White Sox. Oh my gosh, I didn't even realize it was two gems in a row for Manoah. He could really catch a heater here with four straight gems if he takes advantage of these two matchups here. So yeah, I'll cop to 113 being too low. I'd still come in short of you, but I put him more in that 90s group with Paddock, and Logan Allen, and those guys.
Exactly. And you have to be aggressive more so in 12 teamers in this. With Manoah, I did a video on the first one and I thought like, yeah, this isn't very good. I was like, he's getting very fortunate with a lot of it. The second game though, actually was peak Manoah. That was a really good slider. Fastballs were inside a right-hander's much more effectively. Mm-hmm. That actually was believable changeup even got involved too. So that could be something for Manoah that does, again, as you mentioned, it turned into a heater. He's in this Vargas rule tier for me. And I do want to make that transition from Manoah to a couple others. Like you mentioned, hey, we're on the same place of Ranger Suarez, which is funny because I remember last week I had him at 40 and put him to 35, which honestly is not really a big difference for me. Mm-hmm. But we don't believe this is going to last, even though the changeup is really good. His last start, 0 runs in 5 innings, but the changeup wasn't very good. And it's like, is this coming to an end soon? It's really hard with those kind of guys.
It's so hard because we are trying to look forward at the end of the day here. Yeah. And so even somebody like Imanaga, who's been amazing and did come over with some fanfare, certainly has more hype than somebody like Suarez. Even he is a difficult rank because I don't think it's going to stay at this level. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that he's a full-on ace. So you look at guys like that, even a Jared Jones, who's even higher than Imanaga in terms of like quality and pedigree and excitement and all that. I don't think he's an unmitigated, untouchable ace the rest of the way. So they all got pretty high rankings, much higher than they were at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I did get pushed back on Suarez, as I'm sure you do too. 35, he's been the number one rated pitcher. Yes, but you don't get any of those stats if you pick him up from here forward in a trade or something. So it matters, but it doesn't, if that makes any sense.
All right.
Like what he's done matters, but only to a degree.
And you're just talking about the top 20 a little bit here. We do have some changes or some gaps, but honestly, some of them I agree with on you. So, for example, I have Pablo Lopez at 6 right now. I've actually even come out and said I probably would have him at 15 after last night's start. And I thought about it a bit last night. I was like, I'm going to give him one start against the Nationals. I don't want to move him down. Then it's the Nationals. He's going to kill him. I'm like, all right, fine. And then he did. So I was like, fine. Okay, we're going to do that one. Chris Sale, in retrospect, I wanted to have inside my top tier, inside the top 10. I am with you there. I have a Minaga. I am in AGA as an ace. I'm so sorry, but like that's just his name and his prophecy. It's like some terrible fantasy novel. Like, oh, it was there the whole time. So I'm a believer in his four-seamer being legit. I do have some fear that being fastball splitter is a little concerning in the second half. We might see some sort of Joe Ryan drop off like we did last year.
Yep. It's very complete possible. With the homers.
The thing is though, the homers for Imanaga, I actually believe came off of the slider more than others. I remember actually seeing in the preseason clips of Imanaga, like allowing a home run to Patrick Wisdom. What was it on? A slider. And he hasn't been throwing sliders. He's just been going four seamer splitter. And actually, the Trey Turner home run in the World Baseball Classic against Imanaga, slider. So I actually wonder if that's something that they kind of pinned on. I was like, don't do that.
Just go fastball splitter and then your other stuff, your breakers are show me.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing that might be sticking there. I mean, it's just one of those cases of like, it's just working so well. And
I have 14 just so people don't think I'm like way out, right, 9 to 14, but it is in that second tier there. So that,
right.
You definitely are higher.
There are some that you're a little bit more aggressive on, and I'm not necessarily blaming you for it because I get it. I mean, Aaron Nola, I have at 15, you have at 23. I'm a little bit more believing in the curveball being just legit. And just also there's something to be said about Nola just always being like a 200 strikeout guy.
And exactly, like, and like
wins, and just like it's there, and I'm not going to put him top 10 likely, but
so bankable,
yeah. And there's
even with the struggling ERA seasons,
yeah,
he never came out of the lineup in those, right? You lock Nola, good
strikeouts, yep,
yeah, exactly. I feel that
I'm there, but Gosman is interesting. 17 versus 28. I have him at 17. You have him at 28. It has been weird. It's been very strange with Gosman. I think a lot of the things that I've talked about the last 2 years about the ICR, that is the hittable four seamer, are coming to light a bit. Not as dominant of a splitter. I'm more inclined to think that he isn't hurt and it's just kind of a moment of weirdness because we have the small sample. Is there something that you're seeing larger that you're just like, I can't believe in this with Gosman?
I didn't really believe in him coming into the year. The BABIP remains sky high. It's all the way back up to 369. And after two years of being in the top three, including leading baseball in 2022 with a 363, I don't have any good reason to believe that it's going to come way down for Kevin Gosman either. So I believe he is a bit of a whip risk within the upper echelon. And so an upper tier whip risk is like 120, 125. Like that's still good. That's still rosterable. But when you're talking about the upper echelon, you want that sub 120 mark. And I don't really think that that's going to be Gosman's game right now. He did have a 118 last year, so he was under it. But that was, because the BABIP had come down to 321, but that was still third in the league. He shaved his BABIP by 42 points, and it was still the third worst in the league. So I don't know if it's the splitter combined with the turf, because he does have a little bit of a ground ball lean.
It's four-seamer location. It's always been that for me.
So four-seamer location. But either way, he's too hittable. And we're seeing it again with a drop in Ks. So I had to move on because I already came in with concerns. So I moved Gosman down further. Still, I don't think it's actionable. That's the tough part, is that you just set him and forget him. You can't make any moves there. But if you're doing it for trading or something, then I do want people to know that I do rank him lower and I wouldn't find him as desirable in a trade, Kevin Gosman.
I guess the weird decision I would have is, so you have like Framber Valdez and Logan Webb ahead of Gosman at the moment.
Still love him.
And they seem similar just with lower strikeouts than Kevin Gosman, no?
Not completely unfair, but without the historical issues. Mm-hmm. Because again, this is a third year running where now he's paying the toll a bit more. Sure. He being Gosman. So that's kind of my issue, is that like we've been seeing this come. Like Valdez has had some BABIPs and he's got a little bit of a higher BABIP this year too, 325. And so the hits are coming through, but he's been a sub 7.5 hit rate kind of guy for the last 3 years. Webb has always been somebody that, yes, he'll give up some of the hits, but I believe, first off, I like his park setup more.
Yep.
And if it is just the four seamer, then the park thing isn't as big of an issue for Gausman. But I was trying to speculate that maybe it was some of the home park turf aspect that was leading to some.
You could be right about that.
Some extra grounders getting through, maybe. So, no, listen, I love Valdez and Webb. I might have a blind spot toward them. I'm looking at Webb's numbers right now. The core skills aren't great. He's being boomed by the 303 ERA. The whip is really high. I would stand firm on Valdez. I usually link them as a righty lefty.
I do too. Yeah,
but I might need to move off that. Like Valdez has some issues too. 132 WHIP, 4.32.
Yeah, text to Colette about that, please. Because every single start that Valdez has, we text each other, and same thing for Cole Reagans. If you guys don't know this, it's from First Pitch Florida. We would. He actually made his first pick in AL labor as the opening bid was Cole Reagans just for me, and I wasn't there. I was recording a podcast. I felt so bad. And then he took Valdez at like the start of the third round when Cole Reagans was available. I was like, what are you doing? How could you
How
do
dare
that?
You?
And I so we've compared the entire year now between the two. And
well, he's working from behind, right? He's got an uphill battle coming with Fromber. But like with Valdez, or excuse me, with Webb versus Gausman, I can give a little there. Maybe I have to de-link Valdez and Webb because I have a little bit more concerns about Webb. I just think Valdez is going to be okay. I acknowledge he has similar issues, but I have belief there based on the track record. Webb's a little bit sketchier.
Yeah, cool. So a couple, there are two other major ones I think that we are. I mean, Sonny Gray, I understand. I think he just had two really weird starts and he's just generally good. I think the weirdness of Sonny Gray is he's never really excelled long enough through a year to be like a true de facto ace forever.
Yeah.
But he's always just very good. And that has me more hesitant to put him inside the top 20 as of now. But I think over time that he will get back to that. And that's cool. I mean, keep in mind before this was a ranking before Monday night's game where he had two really, really bad outings and just was not in a good place. And we didn't really know if he was still injured or if there was still something else going on, but he had a good rebound yesterday, probably would jump back up to like 24 for me from there. You'd had this ranking before Monday nights too, and you kept the faith and you rightfully so. I don't really think we're too different on the views of Sonny Gray.
Totally agree.
Now the main two here are Freddie Peralta. You have at 9 and I have at 19 when there's Dylan Cease at 16 for you and 28 for me. So let's talk first about Peralta.
Dylan Cease is
Professor Chaos, as I used to call him.
Yes.
And he has been that for the last 4 or 5 starts now. I have not seen a legit Peralta for over a month, I feel, of like the first couple starts, it was just, this is one of the best pitchers in baseball. This is just crazy. And then all of a sudden he lost his four-seamer command and it's not really been there since. You're still very in on this and I might be over big braining this on Freddy Peralta.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll kind of see who ends up being quote unquote right as we kind of move forward here. Cause I do see the two big walk games, specifically the 5 at Pitt and the 6 at the Cubs. Those are pretty crazy, but then just one walk in each of the last two games. Strikeouts have been there consistently. So I did see those two ugly starts and it was 5 innings, 3 runs against the Cubs. So he didn't get as hurt as Freddie Peralta could have with those 6 walks, but that's still, you know, verifiably rough. General Chaos was definitely in full force there. But I kind of looked at those two games as a little bit more of a blip as opposed to something of concern. Now, this is definitely where you have an edge on me, is digging into the pitch performance of every game with the weekly, first off, the daily roundup you do, and then doing weekly rankings. I think you are more in tune with the exact here and now of pitchers. So maybe that's going to cause me to do a little bit of a deeper dive on Peralta. But I was looking at those two walk issues, seeing that he had bounced back both times. He had a 0 walk game after the 5 walks, and then 1 walk in each of the next 2 after the 6. And I figured he's going to be fine. I believe in the ERA indicators, which say he's a low to mid 3s as opposed to this low 4s ERA that we've seen so far. And I kind of feel like he's going to get back on track. But your concerns with his arsenal and how it's not working the way it should be does give me a little bit of pause here on Freddie Peralta.
Yeah, we've seen that before, right, from Peralta. It's like a really good run, then a really bad one. It was how it was last year. Actually, I remember, I think it was around this time last season, he was really struggling. And I remember thinking, no, he's actually doing the things. He's actually looking for seamers well and sliders well, and this should be working, and it's not. And then all of a sudden, bam, he goes off and does the thing. And there's like, oh, cool, you actually do have the feeling. It's great. Right now, we're seeing that valley of just, oh, no, wait, you are a general disarray of just trying to look it down the middle and hoping for the best. And of course, Spore, I'm just assuming as you do your research for all these pitchers, you go on the pitchers player pages where you can just click on any row and see the entire pitch plot and be like, oh, wait, all those reds are everywhere.
Obviously.
No, it's been weird watching Freddy Peralta. I think if you're a manager of Peralta right now, you are feeling anxiety a ton. Mm-hmm. And I hope he's okay. He's also a crossbody guy, and crossbody guys are hyper reliant on rhythm. So that can just, you know, turn up right away, and it could very well be, cool, this is the bad period behind him, he's quote unquote due, which is a weird thing to say. And I don't necessarily love believing in that, but also over time we generally do see the pendulum swing back.
Well, I just think real quick with the due thing, yeah, right? Like we've talked about that and kind of, you know, it's not a sound mathematical principle, but I do think it is a sound baseball principle. Mm-hmm. Under the notion of what we've talked about before with pitchers that we've each talked to individually that talk about how if you break it up into 30 starts, you got 10 where you're going to have your best stuff, 10 where you're not going to have it, and then the 10 in the middle, right? And so if they've been throwing a bunch of starts where they're not wasting like their good starts with bad results in terms of pitch performance, then they are kind of due. Now, I don't know if it's going to come back for Peralta because of the way he pitches and his volatility, but I understand the tongue-in-cheek nature of that due principle.
Right.
But there is some I struggle with it, for sure.
And then there's Dylan Cease, who has been... I mean, he's the prototypical premium cherry bomb in my view. Dylan Cease.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cease.
The start before last night was one of the more impressive ones to me because he finally threw sliders for strikes in the zone. And it's not really something that Dylan Cease does. What he does is he just kind of hovers at the bottom of the zone and then underneath it and relies heavily on O-swing and then kind of hopes that he gets enough strikes with his four-seamer and whatever else. Maybe sometimes curves, maybe sometimes changes, but really just a four-seamer. And it makes for this super volatile, game log. But then all of a sudden last time he was like, oh man, no, I'm going to actually get strikes with my slider too. And it was so good. So they did it against Atlanta yesterday and it was so bad. I mean, sure, it was Atlanta. Also, Atlanta's kind of given like really good starts to a lot of guys. Do you see that Dylan Cease being with San Diego as opposed to the Chicago White Sox really is that kind of like, all right, that's a blip from yesterday. And he really is this different guy because you have him at 16 and I have him at 28.
Yeah, that's precisely what I saw it as was like overall, I thought he was kind of one of the easiest, but at the same time, most difficult projections of the year because I think the lazy 3-year average thing was the right way to approach him because he does have the Goldilocks last 3 years. The too hot, too cold, and right in the middle. Yep. They didn't come in that order. The middle one was 2021. The excellent one was 2022. And then last year was the crummy one. But it's the three ranges that this profile can hit. So I was figuring he's still going to be mostly that guy, but then San Diego versus the White Sox is going to push him closer to 21 and 22 than 23. That's where I was banking things. And so that's why I was like, I'm in. And yesterday I give him mostly a pass for Atlanta. Yes, I was starting him. I don't try to time my ace worthy pitchers and he was pitching like an ace, but I do give Cease a pass for getting smoked against Atlanta, even though they had not been hitting well. But did you see that stat where they were like close to dead last in all the results metrics, but then literally first in all the barrel the hard hit, all that. So you knew that a wave was coming and Cease was the first one to take that hit.
Right.
But I just believe he's more 21 and 22.
I hope you're right. I still feel as if there needs to be something else that unlocks until then, because just being a two pitch guy, it's and just knowing Cease is not a premier command guy, it does.
I think it's fair to hold the line of where you've been specifically you, because I know there's been some like, you know, memorable moments with you kind of being on or being off of Cease and saying, be careful here. And then, of course, last year, very much worked.
Well, I'm an idiot. Yeah.
Because he's not terribly different.
Right.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
It's just that I like the guy that he is. I liked his price this year. Yeah. And like I said, I give him a little bit extra on the positive end of the spectrum from moving to the Padres. That's all. Cool.
So we're going to move on to the games, of course. And we're going to review last week and talk about this week after this break.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go.
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone.
Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43926-7V1.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
All right, so, Sport, I gotta hand it to you. You killed me last week. Absolutely just killed me, okay?
We've been 3-0. on this sort of train here. Sorry to interrupt you, but like we've been going back and forth. I win big, you win big. So go ahead and keep going there.
I mean, look, you had Casey Mize 20 points against the Miami Marlins. I had Cooper Criswell, came in for 4 points. You get the ding there. I had a sit of Logan Webb, and Logan Webb pulled one of those tricks. It was like, all right, yeah, I know my changeup is terrible, so I'm not going to throw it, and we're going to throw everything else. It's like, you can do that once, and that's nice. You can't do it again. So I lost that one. And you had Nick Lodolo, which is just doesn't count because he went on the IL. Mm-hmm. And star of the week, I was saying, look, Andrew Heaney's been doing his Blake Snell blueprint. It's going to be great. He's going to do awesome things. And he had just 10 points. It was a pretty mediocre outing against the Angels. While you said Taj Bradley, 24% roster. Well, you know, 22 points there. About Taj Bradley, by the way, we didn't get to him on your me versus you, the rankings, not versus, but just discussing between the two. You have 48-59 for me. I watched them for today's video of Taj Bradley. Go check that out, guys. It's on YouTube. He is still general disarray. It's kind of wild. Even that 10 strikeout game in 7 innings, 5 earned runs, mm-hmm. even just inside that game is just, he still doesn't know where it's going. And I'm...
We saw that yesterday against Boston. He refaced them this time at home and two different guys, right? Yeah. Like, and Justin and I talk about this a lot on Sleeper in the Bus. When you face a guy when you face a team two times in a row, the first start is no indicator of how the second's going to be. So the fact that he was great the first time shouldn't have made you more confident. He is still the same guy. Now, he did go 10 walks, no strikeouts. I do like that in 7 innings.
10 strikeouts, 0 walks.
Or 10 strikeouts, 0 walks. I do like that aspect, but like you said, he was kind of all over the map, Taj Bradley, with the 5 earned in 7 innings. I like the 7 innings, too. But yeah, he is still somebody who is going to be volatile. You're going to have to be careful. But I'm getting him in the lineup in most spots right now.
And you hit the nail on the head there about 7 innings, because that's something he didn't really do last year. So
yes,
the fact that the Rays are trusting him a little bit more is good. It's just, dude, could you throw strikes, please?
Awesome. Please. Please.
And you said, but he has 0 walks. And it's not like that. It's like he gets the 2-0, 2-1 counts, and then he throws heaters that are like, okay. Exactly. It's very volatile. Just watch a game of it and watch that video. One game matchup, I had Mackenzie Gore against the Phils, and you had Christopher Sanchez. Sanchez showed up with his changeup, got 23 points. Gore, I went for it. It wasn't the worst thing ever from Gore, but it wasn't as good as Christopher Sanchez. So you took me 3-0 last week. It is currently 16 for Spore, 13 for Sir Pollock over here. And now we're going to talk about this week's mark. So streamers for you, who is your streaming pick this week? 20% rostered or lower in Fantasy Pros.
I'm going Ben Lively with the guards. I think this might be the latest rabbit to be pulled out of the hat over there for Cleveland and the kind of their pitching development engine. Or he could just be riding a hot 91% left on base rate. I'm very much open to that being the driving force here. However, I do believe it can continue against the at the Angels. So I have no problem going with Ben Lively. He is kind of a Vargas, maybe Vargas plus. I might not jump off at the first bad start, but it isn't like super skilled. It's a 17% strikeout minus walk. That's pretty good, but it's the 91% left on base. I don't think the Angels are a huge threat, so I like Ben Lively at the Angels.
Yeah, the really good extension is helping him out. He's getting better performance at the top of the zone with his fastballs than usual because of that extension. You see Bailey Ober. You see how this works. Mm-hmm. To me, he's just like a matchup dependent guy because the Angels are the solid one there. I'm going to be ridiculous. I laughed when I said it, but you know what? This guy has 4 out of his last 5 starts are one or runner or lower. And he's not in Coors. He's in Oakland. It's Austin Gomber. I'm about to get gombered, Spore.
Okay. I was just about to say, we talk about it. It's a big fantasy community thing. Don't get gombered. And that relates back to several years ago when he had a two-step that opened at San Francisco, and then the other one was on the road too. It was going to be like a nice little double roadie for him. He gives up 10, I think it was, at San Francisco on Monday. And ever since then, it's been about getting gombered. That said, I do like your daringness here to go at Oakland, because I won't lie to you. Even though he's throwing today and we try to do stuff that's Wednesday or later, I did consider Cal Quantrill.
I considered out of seven.
He's been playing, pitching very well, and he's at Oakland. And I also considered Ryan Feltner, but he just hasn't been pitching well.
Feltner, we can't do that one. Okay.
But I like that you're going with Gomber.
50% or more on Fantasy Pros. I went with Javier Assad because I know he just did well against Atlanta.
Yep.
And he's going to get them again a second time here. And I just can't do it. I broke that one down too. I think he's just getting really fortunate with a lot of the stuff that he does. A lot of mistake pitches that just didn't work. I know he's a Vargas roll right now. It's what I say. Just you keep rolling with it until it doesn't work out. This is not going to last. There are a lot of people that want to say like, no, he's just that good of a pitcher, but they can't actually tell me what he's doing.
Exactly.
Because you won't find it. You won't find the, you know, it's just a ridiculous ICR is on unsustainable marks essentially for weak contact at the moment on a lot of his pitches. The sinker is getting away with a ton. I do not think that Assad lasts. And I really do think that Atlanta is waking up a ton. So I'm sitting with Assad in this one. What about you, Spore?
I love that, by the way. Like, try to dodge the bullet. You've gotten so much good out of him. Don't just wear seven Ernies. They just got to Cease, who's a much better pitcher. They're going to get to Assad. I agree. Joe Musgrove for me. It's not quite a still ill, but because he comes off the IL, I believe, today, but it'll be the second start. This could be a tough week. It's at Cincy, home to the Yankees. The home to the Yankees is the one I'm sitting. At Cincy, by the way, that hasn't been as scary this year, but if they woke up today, this could be a disastrous two-start for him.
Keep in mind, he hasn't had a rehab start since he was on the IL since May 1st.
Exactly.
That's a really good pick there.
I am nervous. Be careful. I would not put him in this week for even a two-step for Joe Musgrove. But even if you're in dailies and you say, I'll try it at Cincy because they stink, do not do the Yankees one. They scare me. Homers are the quickest way to have a blow-up start, and they're mashing the heck out of the
ball. Absolutely. All right, so your star of the week. Who do you got this week, Spore?
Star of the week. So that's 50% or lower rostered at Fantasy Pros. Basically another streamer that, you know, we just kind of think, hey, this guy could be a dude. We've talked about this guy in passing. He continues to meet darn near every test he faces. Mitchell Parker, the very interesting lefty for the Washington Nationals, is now hosting a 3.32 ERA and a 1.16 whip over his seven starts, most of which have been against difficult teams. He just continues to, you know, stand to the test of these matchups. Versus Seattle is not a particularly difficult one. And in baseball's fashion, he'll probably get waxed. But I'm sticking with him. I like what he's been doing. Give me him against Seattle. He did pitch against Minnesota yesterday. So it is a two-step week. But in daily moves leagues where you can go get him, go get Mitchell Parker for Seattle this weekend.
So I'm debating here. I originally wrote in one pitcher, and I don't know if I believe he's going to do the thing that I want, and I can just go for the Hail Mary, and I like going for the Hail Mary.
The
original one was Tyler McGill going at the Giants, and the thing about Tyler McGill that really bothers me is I don't think he's a good command pitcher. He has the ability with 7.5 feet of extension to have an amazing four-seamer upstairs at 96, that he just showed yesterday in his return from the IL. The American spork, as he calls it, is a good put-away offering. It's not a good strike pitch, but that's what he needs, is a put-away offering. Thing is, I don't really trust his cutter and slider to get enough strikes, and I don't expect him to be able to spot that four-seamer upstairs. So I'm like, I don't really want to do that. But he could be a star of the week. But really, my actual pick, the one that I'm submitting to everybody here, is ridiculous. It is Nick Martinez against the Padres.
Oh, let's go. Revenge match.
We're doing it. He's hosting them in Cincinnati, which is stupid. He went 5 shutout innings against the Dodgers with an opener. How did he do that? He did it with his secondaries. And he had his slider working and his cutter working. Changeup was working too. Revenge match. Let's go. Nick Martinez, I've been beating the drum for ages that they should let him start properly. Finally, he has this opportunity once again. He looked decent in the last one. I'm just going to say star of the week, Nick Martinez. What the heck? I'm having fun with it. It should have been Tyler McGill. But you know what? No, it's Nick Martinez, everyone. I will not get credit if it's Tyler McGill.
Okay.
I will not. not.
I respect whatsoever. It, and I like you're always looking for the daring pick. Nick Martinez was somebody who I did like, especially last year with San Diego. I was bummed when he went to Cincy because that park scares me. Yeah, but I like this as a one-off.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we have one more, and this is funny because Sport Every Week always puts out all these potentials.
He has How'd some I miss
really
this one?
Good one-game matchups. He had Kyle Brashick, Garrett Crochet, Hunter Green, and Walker Buehler, Reese Olson, Barrios. Obviously, of course, that's not going to happen because of the hip. The comeback report, Olson, Clark Schmidt versus Joe Musgrove. Carlos Rodon at Yu Darvish is actually, I think, a really good one. I'm actually curious which side you go for there because that is so tough. I probably would go Rodon, but Darvish has...
I would have taken Darvish. Yeah, I would go either way, but I would take Darvish.
The thing is, though, tomorrow, as a lovely birthday gift to me, Wednesday, it's Cole Reagans versus Tarek Skubal.
Bing, 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 bing.
We all know where each of us are going. This is like the most perfect...
It could not be more perfect. It truly could not be more perfect. The reason I didn't see it is I usually look for Friday on.
Right.
But we're not against a Wednesday game, and this has to be it. I mean, of course, I'm taking Cole Reagans.
Before I showed up today, Spore. I knew about the start coming. I'm like, what's going to be that?
It is literally too perfect, and I'm joking when I say I'm going to have Reagans. I will, of course, have Tarek Skubal. Nick will have Cole Reagans. We love both, so we can't really lose here. I just want both to do well. I know you do, too.
But someone's going to get more points. Whoever does.
Someone's going to get more points. Exactly.
It's probably going to be Skubal. But come on, Reagans.
We'll see. No. I don't think that's so guaranteed.
I know. I was tempted to put him at number one this week. Reagans, the problem with Reagans right now is that the slider and the cutter are not as big of weapons as they were the second half of last year.
Yeah.
I think that could be corrected, of course, and Tigers, and that's perfect team to do it
for anything. Yep.
Also, don't be afraid of throwing too many fastballs, please, Reagans, because they cannot hit your heat. Mm-hmm. That is it today. And as I look over, I'm like, oh my gosh, it got absurdly dim because the fire is saying, please, please let me be. Do not poke me again. The stick
shall
let me
out.
Be free.
Let these embers burn.
Spore, it is always wonderful hanging with you by the fire. What do you have going on this week?
Just the standard stuff. Daily SP charts, got OOTP content coming out on Thursday, got the Memorial Day weekend coming up, not doing anything too crazy, just hanging out. I'll enjoy a day off, though. I'm going to unplug on Monday and actually step back.
Absolutely not. Nope. The whole week gets messed up if I don't do the list on Monday, so I got to do the list on Monday.
Oh no, I understand that. I'll still have my daily SP chart that goes out on Sunday night for Monday, but then I don't have to do anything until Monday night when I write the SP chart. So I think we'll probably take a day off the pod, and I'll just breathe a little bit. Nick, the fire hose of the baseball season is something I long for all winter, and I'm not griping about it. I'm really not. I love it. It is a lot, and great work. I don't ever want to, not be grateful for what I get to do for a living.
Yeah.
But it can just, you can burn the candle at both ends a little bit sometimes.
I think there are two major burnouts. There's one around the second week of June.
Yep.
And then there's one right after the All-Star break.
You nailed both of them.
Yeah.
That first one, I can already see it coming. It's 5:21 when we're recording this. It's coming around the corner. It'll be that first one where I'm like, I don't want to see baseball for one night, really, for me. It really is like a one night recharge. Give me a TV show. Give me a movie. Just get baseball off my screen for one night. And then I'm right back in it. And then, like you said, the All-Star break too.
Yeah. That's the one to come back from All-Star break. Like, oh no. All right. Two more months. Let's go.
Let's dial it in.
But anyway, thank you all so much for joining us on behalf of Paul Spore. My name is Nick Pollock, and thanks for joining us by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter at Spore and at PitcherList.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43926 7V1.